I am so excited for you to hear this week's episode of The Scarlet Edit. This is Nikki Corbett coming to you with another episode where we had a wonderful conversation about infidelity. And saying wonderful and infidelity in the same sentence might sound weird, but everybody brings a different perspective based on their experience, whether they've been involved in a relationship where infidelity has happened, or if they coach people or work with people who have experienced that. This week's episode was so much more of a conversation versus an interview. It was full of reflection. It was full of just thoughtful discussion. And I have to say how much I truly enjoyed it. My guest name is Christina Ketchen. She is a coach, and she really dives deep into how people want to feel seen and heard and understood. When we first connected, we were talking about core wounds. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't necessarily understand what core wounds meant. And what it really boils down to is that we are attracted to what we know. So I hope that you all enjoy. It turned out fantastic, and I'm so happy and excited for you all to hear it. Let's get into it. So thank you for wanting to be here with me.
You're welcome. Thanks for being open to having the conversation.
Yeah,
I love your podcast.
Oh, thank you. That means so much. You know, It's funny. I often talk about podcast data and how it's so cool, the data metrics that we can see, right? But you don't know who. So when someone shares that with me, I'm like, oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, cool. So when we met up a while back, we were talking about how we would frame our conversation, what of your expertise would lend itself best to a discussion on this show. And what I had written in my notes was affairs and core wounds, which I think is just awesome, because having had, that's a mouthful, been in an affair myself, I do look back on, you know, where was I at the time of my life where that was what I thought a good decision for myself. And again, I have no regrets on my whole relationship, but this version of me would not enter into that type of relationship. So I'm excited to dig deeper into this with you, because there are so many people who have been involved in an affair, whether they were the one who was, you know, stepping out on their spouse or significant other, or whether they were the one who was the other person in the relationship. So let's get into it.
Or the one being stepped out on.
Yes. Yes, exactly. There's three people in all of this. Yeah.
And I think what led us into this conversation, or part of our conversation, was that every single party, no matter what role you are in of the three, hurts like hell.
Yeah. And it is, because at some point, everybody knows, right? I mean, for the most part, at some point, everybody knows. I don't know. I mean, I would imagine there's probably a lot of people out there who do have affairs that never, like, quote unquote, get caught in whatever way or another. But then I do wonder, you know, is the person who is being cheated on, do they ever really, really not know? Is there a part of them that has a little bit of a feeling? I don't know. I mean, we'll never know, but it is something to consider.
It's interesting, because when I chat with people about that, you know, we always look back and we go, oh, now that makes sense now. And now that makes a different kind of sense.
Right.
So that hindsight piece.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your work and how you got to, you know, being a subject matter expert in this field. And then we can really dive into how these things happen and why they happen.
Yeah, sounds good. I started out as a life and a self-love and relationship coach.
Okay.
And I was going through a divorce. And as I was going through my divorce, I was realizing that I had many team members to help me with all the different areas. Mm. And all of the people that are essentially helping you through divorce aren't helping you through the emotional aspect of it. So I started up a little business called The Good Divorce. Okay. And in with the intention of helping people divorce with kindness, with amicability. I believed this is possible. We can choose to show up and be kind, no matter the circumstance. And I ran this business for 7 years. The majority involved some sort of affair or stepping out on.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, the majority that had me sitting in. And then I also have like my self-love coaching. So two essentially coaching practices that really focus on relationship. And within relationship, one of the biggest topics is stepping out. Grass is greener. The stats are in. The divorce rate is over 50%. Like we're not doing this well.
Right.
So I learned a lot sitting with couples who experienced adultery. And I experienced a lot in talking to all three of those parties over the course of 7 years and seeing the hurt and pain and anguish in every situation for every person involved.
Yeah.
And this question always comes up, like, why? Why? And you and I had this conversation, like, why did you choose that? Why did you choose that person?
Yeah. Oh, are you asking me?
Sure. Well, I'd love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so this is going to be another episode where it's like a Nikki therapy session. I love these ones. No, I mean, I swear to God, like I'm being dead serious because sometimes when people who have your expertise and your career come on my show, that's what it ends up being. And I'm like, I'm getting this amazing insight and I just happen to be recording it. No, so why? I mean, you know, when I look backwards, and obviously, like, hindsight is 20/20. My marriage was just, we just were not a right fit. We weren't chemically compatible. You know, we didn't have the chemistry that I know I want and I need in a relationship. And I think there was just a lot that just didn't click for us. And I think when we got together, we were in similar places in life and in kind of going after what it was that we wanted. But we quickly, you know, outpaced one another because we went different directions. So by the time that my marriage ended, you know, I kind of had felt like I was living with a roommate for quite some time. And I was so ready to be loved. And I will go so far to say that I was desperate to be loved. Not in a I would have taken love from anyone type of way. But when this man came along and it was so easy and so quick. And we, you know, he is somebody that I had met years prior in my life. And then we had just had a happenstance. We happened to be in the same place at the same time and had this reconnection moment. It was just like, ooh, like fireworks. So it was so easy to fall for him because the chemistry was there. And I've, you know, we both were at a point, even though he was still married, that we were both feeling that desperation for somebody to just love us who we were. So I would say that's the why.
And that why touches right on our core wound, which is what we were chatting about we all have a need to be seen, heard, loved, and safe.
Yeah.
And the core wound stems from this place, which is, what is the one thing that you wanted the most as a child but didn't ever get? And in the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people I've asked that question to, I have heard, with the exception of one time, to be seen, to be heard, to be loved. And the other time was to be safe.
Wow.
And that thing that you just spoke of, he saw me. We felt so drawn and so seen is what I heard. That taps on that little core wound.
Gosh. In some ways, this conversation about, you know, like inner child stuff or, you know, what happened in your childhood, core wounds, I get a little uncomfortable And I think the reason why is because I don't look back and have any moment that's significant where I'm like, oh, like this happened. Therefore, these feelings are what are at, you know, what were at the surface or what are at the surface. I mean, I look back on my childhood fondly, and I do feel like I was very loved and very cared for. And I mean, I have a wonderful family. My parents just celebrated their 50-year wedding anniversary, and we hang out all the time. We're super close. Like, we have a wonderful relationship. So I think my uncomfortableness comes from like, okay, well, if my recollection of everything is accurate, like, then what was lacking or what is lacking that made me feel these ways as I grew up as an adult?
Okay, so before you label yourself with all that, because we're not so sure that's true, like the part about you, okay, what am I missing here? Uh-huh. Because there's this other piece. If you were to walk into a room and there were 100 men, you would be chemically, like you say, drawn to one or two of them.
Yeah.
Same Hopefully. Thing. Same for all of us. Yeah. Or let's say one. Mm-hmm. And this, I don't know if you've heard of this book, Getting the Love You Want by Harville and Helen Hendricks.
No, but I need to add it to the list. Huh?
It's a heavy duty nugget of a healing book. But what it tells you is that what you are drawn to is what you know. Mm. So that core wound doesn't necessarily have to be a pain point, but what you're drawn to is mannerisms. Something in this person is reminding you of what you know, and what you know comes from your early your primary years with your primary caregivers.
Okay, this is cool.
And that person may or may not be what is good for us, depending on what that looked like in our early years.
Okay. That is something I've never heard said before. So you can be drawn to things that were positive.
For sure.
Okay.
For sure. Like having a beautiful relationship and marriage and partnership and team playing perspective, like to grow up in, pardon me, in that environment. That's beautiful role modeling. You know, we talk about nature versus nurture. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of pieces here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes me feel better.
Yeah. It's not like I didn't want you leaving with, something's wrong with me and I need to figure out what it is.
Yeah.
We are drawn to people for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Let's go through all three roles in infidelity, because that I think is interesting. Because do you feel like in some cases it's just not that deep? Like sometimes people are just like they don't want to be committed, or they have a sex addiction, or they are just a shitty person, and so they don't care that they might be hurting people. I mean, in some cases, is it? Just that cut and dry?
Yeah, it's so hard to describe it like that. But yes, I have had experience knowing people who are chronic cheaters, adulterers. You know, I feel like those words have such negative connotations, but it's a social thing. But there are people who have the genuine, I feel seen, I feel heard, I feel loved by this person. This is what I've always wanted, and end up staying together. I've seen that. Yeah. And I've seen they're just chronically choosing that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, one of the businesses you don't want repeat business in is the divorce business. And that's I would say. Let's do the work to understand how you got here and who you are and what you want the future to look like, so that you're not back here doing this with me again, because that's not what we want. Divorce is painful.
Totally.
It's exhausting. It's so many things.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get a couple repeat customers and you're like, okay, there is a common denominator here, and it is this extramarital affair business that is continuing to happen. So, yes, answer to your question. Long answer to your question.
Yeah. I mean, because you do, I mean, you do wonder. I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking as we're talking, it's like all these different scenarios are bouncing through my head of different people that I've known that have been in these types of situations. And, you know, I think back to, you know, friends who have had situations where, you know, the woman has cheated on the man in the marriage, and then they've like tried to stay together, or they have stayed together. And then you kind of wonder, okay, well, can you make it into a positive, right? So far, I've never seen an example where someone has been able to recover. I mean, people have certainly stayed together, but recovering and actually getting back to a point where you do love each other, respect each other, care for each other, it's more of been a, we're going to stay together, but I'm going to punish you repeatedly for what you did to me.
Or not, just never trust you.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, trust is the biggest piece in this. And in all honesty, Nikki, I haven't seen a couple. I have no tangible couple that I have seen recover from this and carry on in a happy relationship.
Yeah. I mean, So many people, I think they stay together for their children. Mm-hmm. And eventually it ends up not, they finally get to a point where they're like, well, this is not gonna work, and they do finally end it. But it's what I've seen is it takes years usually to get to that point.
Yes. I've also seen affairs go on for years and years and years, mm-hmm. and not be found out.
Yeah. Which is just, I mean, do you think that some people, like, so not being found out, but maybe not being found out, but maybe like the wife or the husband does deep down know? One thing I'm curious about, you know, in my experience, obviously that's the only one I can speak candidly as possible on. But, and of course, too, you know, I often put this little disclaimer when I do make this comment, is that when you're in the thick of a relationship and you do trust the person that you're with, you very much believe what they tell you. And then when the relationship ends, you do look back and you think like, well, I chose to believe that. Do I know for certain that it was true? No, because I wasn't living that other life with him. But from what I was told, his wife knew almost from the very beginning and just kind of was like, okay, that's another part of your life. And he told me that he had always told her, any question you ask me, I will answer truthfully, but just know that like you might not like what you hear. Now, again, I chose to believe that. I would love to know if that was actually true. But my question to you is, from your experience, like what is it on that side of these people that like, I would try to put myself in her shoes periodically and think like, well, if this were me, would I just be like, well, forget this. Like, you want to be with someone else? Go be with someone else. So like, let's end this so I can go be with someone else. But a lot of people do know and they don't do that. They stick around.
Mm-hmm. I go to these questions like, did he ever talk about leaving her?
No, he never made me any false promises. It's like, on one hand, I stayed with him as long as I did because I really believed that we did have a very strong love that could withstand anything and that eventually he would choose to be with me 100%.
Yeah.
But, you know, he wasn't making me false promises. He was pretty clear that, you know, he didn't want to get divorced. I think it was less about, I don't want to end my relationship with her, and more about, I don't want to be divorced. He had been divorced once and he didn't want to do that again. So, but my, you know, response to something like that was always like, well, but if you're not happy, like, why wouldn't you just want to be happy?
And like, I also feel when someone steps into or chooses something, like when they're choosing to have an extramarital affair, this is often a question for me. Don't you know that if, and there's a high probability that this does get disclosed, but if you get found out, it will be a high probability again that your relationship will end. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's this consequence, and the consequence is I can lose my marriage. This can be over. Don't know for sure, but pretty sure. Like,
yeah,
if you know that the end could come because you're choosing to step out, but don't want a divorce. Don't want another divorce. That's not in line with one another.
I know. It is wild to me. You know, it is. It's crazy. I mean, I've had another friend in a situation where it was like his wife's kind of mantra was more just like, just don't embarrass me. So I would always ask her, like, why even be in a situation like that? Like, that sounds awful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, it does anyway. I don't know. I mean, everybody's different and what everybody will tolerate mm-hmm. is different and what everybody prioritizes, I guess, is different, right? I mean, maybe some women prioritize, you know, having a home and having, you know, the outwardly like, oh, this is like, look at our, you know, mom, dad, two kids, dog, picket fence, like to the world, like this is what we are, even though behind the scenes, it's not what we are.
Yeah, there are many different types of relationships out there, many different mm-hmm. types of people, and what fills our cup fills our cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, if we go back to those three roles, one of the most, they all have different or interesting conversation points, because with the person who stepped out, it's helping them overcome the guilt.
Yeah.
And for the person who has been stepped out on, it's helping them overcome the anger
mm-hmm.
and helping them see. And this is what I find the most interesting part of this conversation is helping both parties understand that they both created that circumstance.
Oh, mm-hmm.
It's like, what do you mean? He chose or she chose to cheat on me. That's their choice. I'm like, but the relationship, for the most part, not across yeah. the board, but for the most part, the relationship got to a place where that door opened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, one of the things that I often have, you know, said, and I do believe this, is that, you know, happy people just don't go and have affairs. If you're genuinely like happy and satisfied in your relationship, you're not going to, even if you meet, you know, the biggest number one supermodel in the world and she's like, oh my God, I want you. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Agreed. And often I talk to people about that door being open and they don't realize the door is open until they're standing through the doorway. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like, yeah. What the heck? How did I get to this place where I'm desiring this and choosing this? What? And you, yeah, that's the whole unraveling of the relationship itself.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had a short video, like a reel, kind of get some traction a few months ago, because one of the things, I had a conversation with a man and he had said that he didn't think that having an affair was a choice. He said that they just happen. And I thought that that was just an interesting way of phrasing it. So I kind of like posed the question, like, well, what do you think about this? And on one hand, I'm like, yeah, I don't think most normal, rational, at their core, kind people are sitting down in the morning going, you know, I think I'm going to have an affair. Like, I don't think that they're like actively plotting this out. And yes, of course, everything is a choice. It is a choice to end up being romantic with somebody else, to end up kissing somebody else, sleeping with somebody else. But what you just kind of said is, it's like the door opens up, you don't necessarily realize that it has opened up. And then you find yourself on the other side where you are like, oh my God, I'm in bed with somebody else. Like, what the fuck am I doing? And mm-hmm. it's not that you didn't choose that, but it's like, it wasn't a goal you set out to pursue.
Yeah, it's true. And there's this mystery behind it, because there is a belief that, you know, it is this conscious choice. And essentially, yes, it is a conscious choice to choose to kiss the person or to choose to flirt with the person. But when that underlying piece is, we're feeling so seen and heard by somebody in that moment, it is a hormone overload that shuts down the prefrontal cortex, which is reasoning, right? Rationale.
And
it's really tough to, in all honesty, when you're feeling those feelings and you're feeling the opposite at home, people mm-hmm. look at that and go, there's no comparison. I, and you know, one tender conversation I had for quite some time with another young person was, I say young person, she's younger than me. Once they have, there's been an attempt to repair post affair. And the thing that's been hardest to turn off, I've seen this a few times actually, is the memory of what, how good and how wonderful that felt and how beautiful that was. And then in trying to repair, being in a relationship that you can't compare that to. You don't have that hormone overload. You don't have that chemistry reaction, the physiological reactions to it.
Yeah.
So affairs hurt everything. They really do. They hurt every single person involved.
Yeah.
So deeply. Yeah.
And then, I mean, so let's talk a little bit about the person that's the other person in the situation. Because going back to one of the things that I said, you know, it's not like you go out and you're like, I want to be the other woman. It's not like that was something that I was like, oh, I'd really love this. Like, that sounds amazing. Like, let's really complicate things.
Mm-hmm.
Yet so many women and men find themselves in that situation where they're like, all of a sudden, they're so wrapped up in somebody. And then it's like, oh my God, how did I get here? And I mean, I know personally, you know, women, and I mean, even myself included, when everything first started, I wasn't thinking like, oh, I'm going to fall in love. And I've had friends who were similar, like, oh, well, this will just be casual. I'll keep dating other people. I'll like, you know, this will just be for fun. Like, he wants to spoil me. He wants to take me nice places. Like, this will be great. And then I'll keep dating. And then once I meet somebody that I really like, then I'll end it. And then it ends up going completely the opposite, where they fall in love with this guy. And then it's this, you know, chaos and drama because he can't fully be with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the unpacking with the other person is an unpacking of grief. Grief and shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk more about both of those feelings. Grief first.
Mm. Well, grief is this, you know, it's defined by its seven stages, but it's also so undefined because grief is like, you know, walking along that ocean edge and every now and again, your toes get, you know, kissed with the water. And then you get the gush where you're like running away from the edge because it's coming in bigger and faster and harder. We have no, you know, grief comes up and comes in waves and in moments, and it can absolutely shut us down. Like, grief affects our sleep, affects our ability to eat. It affects our confidence, our love for self, our ability to function. And tying it into the shame work, I mean, the most profound researcher out there in regards to shame is Brené Brown. If you read any of her content, you know, carrying around this bucket of shame, it's this self-definition that is less than, not worthy. You know, I talk about this epidemic of not enoughness that's going on. And there, that again goes back to that, you know, core stuff where what we need is to be seen and heard and loved. It's what we all need, whether we all got it or not. So I don't know if that answered your question very well, but, you know, grief and shame are, I actually feel like when we're carrying shame, it is a form of grief.
Mm.
It's okay. Yeah. Interwoven in there, like, because to let go of, you know, the what we need in order to heal is ultimately forgiveness. In order to heal the mother wound, we need to forgive the mother, father, etc. And forgiveness is a real nugget of work. But when we turn that around and realize, oh, wait a second, you're telling me that I need to forgive me? Like, I need to forgive myself for making this choice that has ripped my life apart. Mm-hmm. That is a body of work.
Yeah. As you're talking about all this, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about my own experience and my own journey, you know, when that relationship ended. I don't know, because I do struggle with like the stages of grief, because I think mainly because people have said they're, even though they're in stages, like you don't necessarily feel them in order. I mean, I know that I had like such a deep, like profound sadness and just heartbrokenness. And even though I was the one that ended it, I still like, I often look back and I think like I chose to break my own heart because I knew that this was just, it wasn't going to go any further than where we were. And I got to a point where I was like, I know I deserve more. So I'm willing to break my own heart to, you know, put myself in a position eventually where I can go out and get that. I don't really necessarily feel like, yeah, I don't know. I was just going to say on anger, like, did I ever feel any anger? And I was going to at first say no, but then I was like, no, you did have some moments, but it wasn't anything where it was just like, you know, I want to throw things and break windows or anything. But there was certainly some anger well after the fact, I think, when it finally surfaced.
Yeah, I think I'd be curious. Do you journal?
You know, I go back and forth. I don't really now, right now. And I don't know. I go back and forth on that. I used to be a big journaler, like in my 20s and high school era, but no.
Did you journal through your process of when you broke your own heart?
No.
And that would have been fascinating. And this is why I love journaling.
Yeah.
Because you can look back and see what was going on. But I would be certain that you would have moments of anger with him, anger with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, all under the cloud of this sadness, which is essentially grief. Mm-hmm. And that's every party involved in an affair, all three, all experience grief. Even if they chose it.
Mm-hmm. No, and I can agree with that. I mean, especially because, you know, even though, you know, like I said earlier, even though I wasn't given any false promises about anything, I still did envision this long-term life with him. Like I couldn't imagine my life without him. And then all of a sudden I kind of had to. And so there was definitely, you know, some grieving there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's like, then you get on the other side of it and it's just like, wait, like what? Like, would my life be where it is right now if I hadn't have made that choice? You know, if I hadn't have said, you know, I can't do this anymore. I have no clue, obviously, and I'll never know. But I'm glad that I won't know because I love my life. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't have changed that.
And look at what it's given you.
Yeah. I mean, I started this podcast because of it. Have you seen any themes in the people who are the adulterer? So not the spouse that's, you know, being cheated on, and not the other woman or other man, about the one who is choosing to have the affair in their marriage. Have you seen any similarities, any commonalities, any personality traits?
Oh my goodness. What a great question. Charisma.
That's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you, I don't know if you read any of follow any of Dr. Ramani's work. She's the narcissist specialist.
Ooh.
Like, she's the narcissist guru is who
okay.
she is. And
I have heard of her. That's what, okay, when you said that, I was like, why do I know this name?
Yeah, yeah. She is the go-to when it comes to narcissism. But she talks about charisma's link to narcissist behavior. And she's like, if you see a charismatic person in a room, like that person you're drawn to because they're charismatic, just take a pause. Check in.
Yeah. Oh.
And it's interesting because one, like my daughter, when I had this conversation with my daughter, actually, she looked at me, she goes, well, Mom, you're charismatic. I'm like, yeah, but it's a different kind of charisma. It's that. I'm always so afraid to label things, but it's like that attention needing, seeking, shine the light on me charisma,
mm-hmm.
not something that you're quietly drawn to, right? It's that bright, loud. Do you get what's your take on the word charisma, Nikki?
No, I like it because, you know, I certainly think that my ex had a ton of charisma. I mean, But I don't necessarily feel like his was loud. I do feel mm-hmm. like it was more kind of quiet and understated, but it was mm-hmm. certainly there. And then I'm thinking about female friends of mine who have been the ones that, you know, ended up having affairs on their husbands, and what, you know, how I would relate charisma to them. And I think that tell me what you think about this. Do you think that charisma and mystery kind of go hand in hand a little bit?
I can see the link that yeah. tracks. Yeah.
Cause in some ways I think about women in particular, about like, oh, like they have this level of charisma, but it's because there's a little bit of mystery behind it. Like, oh, like what's her story? Like what's she got going on? Like, you know, oh, like is she really, you know, is she happy? Like, you know, oh, she's really successful, or, you know, all these different things. And I'm like, I feel like there's a link there that I've never thought of before right now.
Is that though? Is it mystery, or is it an energy that you're attracted to and you're like curious about it, which creates yeah. mystery because you have all these questions about it, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, ultimately, like, I think everything is energy. So yes. I'm always going to say yes, because I think energy drives every decision I make. So I feel like, yes, absolutely.
yeah.
But yeah. yeah.
Other characteristics. I mean, the next thing that comes up for me is flirtatious, but that's kind of obvious. I don't know. Is it?
Yeah.
But there's a flirty thing there. But I also think we could link that to charisma. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Charisma is umbrella. Yeah, I mean,
it's definitely true. Because then as far as like flirtatious behavior, and it's like, you know, where is that line drawn where, you know, it's okay up until this point or this level, or like, you know, sometimes you'll hear people say like, oh, they're just naturally flirtatious, you know? I mean, you hear even like kids, like you hear flirtatious being used as to describe even little kids, you know, like a little baby girl can like see a man and like, oh, she's flirting with you, you know? And it's like, okay, but is she really? Like, she's just a little girl. So, and then, yeah, like going back to what I said, like, you know, where is that line drawn where it's like, oh, he's just a flirty guy versus like inappropriateness?
I don't know. Do you like a flirty guy if you're with somebody?
Yeah. I mean, I love being flirted with if I want the attention, of course. I know something that bothers me is when if I am out with somebody and they for some reason feel like they need to give somebody else a bunch of attention. Like, say we're sitting at a bar and it's me, the man, and then somebody else on the other side. If for whatever reason he all of a sudden feels like he needs to give this person more attention than like a, oh, hello, or like if they ask, oh, like what kind of wine are you drinking? And he says, oh, I'm having the blah, 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 you know, engaging other people in conversation. That's where I'm kind of like, what are you doing? Like, why am I mm-hmm. here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
I think
flirting, you know, as a character trait needs to be somewhat defined, right? Because it's a big piece, but it's also what's okay with you. Like we talked about earlier, we all have, there are so many different types and kinds of relationships out there. And what is okay mm-hmm. with you, what's okay with me, what's okay with is so independent.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So for people that are listening and are just kind of, you know, following along this conversation with us, whether they've played one of these three roles or not, what would you say is like a takeaway, you know, because maybe there's someone listening who's considering having an affair. Maybe there's someone listening who's considering being the other woman or the other man with somebody who's married or in a relationship. And as it relates back to the initial discussion about the core wounds, like what would you advise them to like stop and pause and look inward on before making that decision that could be very damaging, painful, life-altering, any of the above?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think about hearing you in the beginning of our conversation today, which was you saying that if you were who you are today then, which we don't have hindsight, but yeah. if that were the case, you wouldn't make that decision today. Why?
Well, for me, I feel like, you know, when I look back, clearly my self-worth was not where it needed to be. Because now when I look at where my self-worth is, where my expectations are, where my boundaries are, where what I know I want for my life and what I believe I deserve for my life, it is not somebody that is committed to somebody else. So I say that because that's kind of been my own evolution as a woman. Now, do I think I was in this like horrible place back then? No, absolutely not. I mean, I felt like he really helped me raise my standards. And then unfortunately for him, I just raised them so much higher that he was no longer, you know, the right person for me. But yeah, I mean, I think that because I chose to work on myself, that got me to where I am now. So I guess that's a great answer to my own question is that, you know, if somebody were to be toying with the idea of having an affair or choosing to be involved with somebody who is married, it's like, hey, like, what could you work on yourself during this time instead of making this choice so you could get past that faster without the heartbreak, without all of the time invested in somebody that ultimately is probably not going to be able to give you what you want.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because I like to look back on life and say, would I make that choice differently? Very sure. I would make a different choice today. However, I see the gems in the muck. Like you've learned and developed some amazing things due to this choice in your life.
Oh, absolutely. And there's no regrets. And that's what I often say. And I think sometimes people are surprised, you know, when people say like, oh, do you regret it? Or if you were to go back to that time in your life, would you make that choice again? And it's like, well, if I was this version of me, like, no, I wouldn't make that choice. But if I were to go back to that version of me at that period in time, like, I probably would make the choice again. And do I regret it? Absolutely not. Like, it got me here. I don't know who I would be today without that part of my story. So no, I'm not going to ever say that I regret it. I don't.
Mm, I love it.
Thanks.
So the reason why I preface it with that is, hey, you're going to choose, you have free will and choice. You're going to choose what you're going to choose. Know that any part of this equation, the three parts, is going to very likely break your heart. And that you will have a significant chapter, an opportunity to learn a whole lot about you and what love means to you from this experience. I also look at it and say, you know, what's the why? Like, why? Looking in, understanding, why am I attracted to this? And I think you actually touched on something so important, which is you talked about my self-worth is different now than it was then. Given, that's a given and a great thing when we're on a growing trajectory.
Yeah.
But how do you, there, you know, you look back and this would be the interesting part about you having a journal. You're like, what did your inner voice know? What was your inner voice saying to you in those moments when you made those choices, right? Because I look at it and go, we turn that inner voice down all the time. We are told to question it all the time. And I can look back and go, if I would have listened to my heart, my inner wise, wise heart, I would have listened to me, which meant I would have made this choice over here, but I didn't listen to myself. So that's different than looking back and saying, oh yeah, now that makes sense. It's like you said earlier, when we look back and go, I knew this was happening. I knew this choice should have been different. I knew I should have done this differently and we didn't. So there's something about, and again, another point that comes up is really hard to listen to our inner voice when we are in hormone overload.
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, and one of the things I was just thinking about as you were saying that is, you know, the difference between lust, love, and limerence. And I didn't know the term limerence until, you know, just recently. But really diving into that and understanding what that means, I'm like, oh my God, like, hello, that is exactly where I was for a significant period of time. I mean, we were just obsessed with one another. And it's so easy to call it love. And do I believe that it was love? Sure, absolutely. I mean, I did. I loved him very deeply. But I think it started off as this very obsessive limerence where it was just like, oh my God, finally, like, finally, you're here. And I think that, you know, so many people want that feeling. And then also, too, to touch back on one of the things you just said as well about that inner voice, right? I think sometimes we silence that inner voice because we don't want to hear it. We're like, yeah, it's almost like your mom. Like, okay, I know you're right. Okay, I know you're right. I don't want to hear it.
That's going to be way too hard if I listen. If I listen to my inner voice, that is going to be so hard.
Yeah. And that's what's so crazy. I mean, I had a conversation with somebody a few weeks ago on this show when we were talking about boundaries. And it's one thing to get to a point where you can set them. It's entirely another when you have to actually enforce them.
Yeah. Honoring your boundaries is a thing for sure.
Yeah. Because it comes with a whole other set of skills that you have to use in order to enforce them. And then it's like, oh shit, like, can I do this? But then when you do, it feels so good. And you're just like, I can conquer the world.
Yeah, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, it's great. It feels great for confidence building. Absolutely. Oh my God. Yeah. I remember getting to that point a few years ago and, you know, just having to shut down a few people that wanted to enter into my life. And it was just like, oh, yeah, see ya. And then I was like, man, I feel good. I'm going to go buy myself a present for doing that.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Okay. So before we wrap this up, can we talk a little bit more about the being attracted to what you're used to as far as the core wound thing goes? Because, you know, that's really stuck with me because, like I said, I don't have these memories of negative or trauma experiences as a young kid. So then when you said that, I'm thinking, oh, well, great. I'm attracted to what I've seen, which is love and respect and friendship.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So elaborate a bit more on that, because I think that's really important distinction.
The piece about being able to witness healthy love and therefore have healthy love.
Well, that, but also, you know, because you use the term core wound at first, and I think that people use that as like a, it's like a negative, right? Like, oh, this is my core wound, like something that hurt me or traumatized me, when you're basically saying, no, it's just you're attracted to what you see or what you...
Well, I'm saying and or.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Yes, and or, exactly.
And or. Yeah. And, you know, think about it. When you are, if you have grown up like you had, like you did in a house witnessing a loving, happy, calm relationship, that's how you described it. That to me would say that you have, you know, your nervous system is calm. You have a great baseline. And when you're in an experience with people who aren't seeing you or are not your people, don't have in line core values, you might feel a little elevated. You know, that nervous system is talking to you. It's like, don't know this. My nervous system doesn't know this. My nervous system knows what calm and open and safe and loving looks like. And our brains and our bodies are drawn to what we know. What is familiar to us is what we are drawn to. Because it's what we know. Whether it was good for us, healthy, bad for us, doesn't matter. It's what feels known in the body. It's like I had this, I was going through this relationship heartbreak stuff. And I had this, you know, I know the feeling, I know where it sits in my body. And I recognized in that moment that that hollow pit feeling in my stomach that I get, I know it really well. And it's almost comfortable.
Yes.
Meanwhile, it's causing me to can't sleep, can't eat, can't function, but it's really comfortable too.
Okay, I can totally relate to that because a few years ago, I had this thought process or this thought as I was going, as I was out walking. That's where I do my best thinking, I swear. And it was this weird realization that, like, I am comfortable in sadness. I am comfortable with that feeling of like longing or wanting someone that doesn't want me back. And I kind of got to that point. And I'm like, ugh, like, I don't want to be comfortable there. Like, I want to be comfortable in the happiness and in the joy and in, you know, being in a healthy relationship. So it was just a weird realization. So when you just said that, it's like, yeah, it's like, you know, it's like when something has happened, it's like, okay, well, I'm comfortable here. I've done this before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We love patterns. We love patterns, which again, speaks, that's one more piece that speaks to what patterns you learn, because we learn them in our primary years. Mm-hmm. You carry out in relationship, right? We often, I don't know how many people I've chatted with, and they've looked at me and said, I have married my mother. Mm. I have married my father. It's like, that makes perfect sense because that is what you know.
Yeah.
Those deep patterns under there are just that, right? It's like, hey, this feels comfortable. Why? Well, if someone told you, hey, this person feels comfortable to you because they're marrying your mother, you'd be like, what? I don't want to date my mother.
Yeah, yeah.
But right. That is what it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff.
Well, Christina, thank you so much for being here and for having this amazing conversation with me. If people are curious about working with you or learning from you, where can they find you?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on today. It was a lovely conversation with you.
You're welcome.
You can find me at christinaketchen.com. You can find all of my resources there. I publish a podcast and a Substack written piece every week. So I'm constantly sharing things that I learn and would love people to come check it out.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. This
thank
is great.
You, Nikki.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Scarlet Edit. As always, I appreciate you being here so much and for coming back week over week to listen to the conversations that I am putting out into the world. If you have not already, I would absolutely love it if you went to Apple and rated this episode 5 stars. If you have a comment to share, that would be so welcome as well. If you haven't already subscribed to my YouTube channel, it's at The Scarlet Edit. I would love for a follow on there because it's a fun place to hang and I really enjoy creating audio and video content for all of you. So thank you always for being here, and we will see you next week.